One, Jim, I'm an alcoholic. One more week.
That's what we said.
Yeah. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. This step can be broken down into three parts. Knowledge of the need of this step is based on past experience of AA members, some of whom have demonstrated the ability to forget, that they have not been cured of alcoholism. They have mistaken recovery for cure. I can relate with that. I've seen that a lot. People come in here and they get well really fast, and they got the world, you know, and things are going really good, and the next thing you know, they're gone. And you read about them in the paper, or you see they're either jailed or they were killed. One of the first guys that I sponsored had a year in, and he always came in and out, and he thought he had one more drunk left in him. Things were great. He had a job, a car, a family, a home, and he ran his car into a tree at 100 miles an hour, and there was nothing left of him because he wanted to drink again. Now, when I went to his funeral, his two young kids were there and his wife, and all she kept saying was, why? Why? Everything was going good. Everything was, with them was good, and the job was good, and, you know, that's, and it happened to me a couple times. I sponsored a guy who had a year in, and things were good for him. He got an apartment. Things were good, and then he died on a train going back up to Buffalo. He thought he could take one more drink, get away with it, you know. So that statement hits me really hard because I've seen it. You know, one thing, and if you're around here long enough, you'll see it. You'll see people who think, no matter how much time they have, that they got this. And that's when it gets scary. They have mistaken recovery for cure. So after a few months of sobriety, they have considered practice of AA philosophy unnecessary. We sometimes overlook the fact that the human mind was not constituted to remember the pain and sorrow suffered from this disease. It's hard to remember pain. I have a toothache, I go to the dentist. The pain is intense, I go to the dentist, he takes it away. But I can't recreate that pain in my mind. I can't re-feel that pain. It's the same with alcoholism. All the crap that, all that pain that I had put myself through and other people, after things are going good for a while, I can't remember that pain. And so we tend to repeat that pain because we don't remember it. We don't re-feel it. We sometimes take our changed personalities too much for granted, assuming that once acquired, they will always stay with us. We are changed people. We say we're changed. We tell people we're changed. That's why anonymity is so important, because you know, we've seen on television people saying, oh, I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous now, I go to meetings, and the next thing you know, they're out drinking. You know, they had a slip or something, and that hurts other people's recoveries, because then they think AA doesn't work. Why should I try it if it didn't work for him? So each morning we pray, for help and guidance when we are lonely or confused or uncertain, each night, every night, a prayer of thanks. Each day is a reprieve from drinking. And I'm not saying that I do that every night, because sometimes I'm exhausted, I'm tired, I fall asleep. Or sometimes I'll start praying and the next thing you know it's morning. Most of us find it well to choose for each day a quiet time to meditate on the program. I asked my sponsor about meditation. What is meditation? You know? And all he told me was, and he said, you know, you can go through the religions and get far out in this meditation stuff. And he said, just take a few minutes each day and think about something that's true. And stay with it for a couple minutes. It helps us to focus, because we're people who lose focus. We lose focus in our lives. We lose focus on what we should be doing. And this helps us to train our mind to have some focus. We keep conscious contact with God and pray to make that contact closer. Anybody who has been sober for any length of time, for a longer period of time, can attest to the fact that they have a conscious contact with a power greater than themselves. It's something that you can't readily go out and explain to somebody. It's something that has to actually happen to you. And I know many people in this fellowship, and I've sat down and talked with them, and we've talked about the things that have happened to us anonymously through our higher power. And it's sometimes deeply and profound things that happened. You know? So we continue to develop that. My prayer, I talk to my higher power all day long, whether it's good or bad or whatever's going on. Sometimes I just yell at them. Sometimes I just swear at them. Sometimes I treat them just like whoever. You know, because I need that interaction between me and my higher power. And this step actually helps me to commune with my higher power and get closer. This is one of the hardest steps to work on. And a lot of people gloss over this step. Because you're actually, what you're doing is you're trying to turn your will and life over to something you can't see, hear, or feel. And it's another leap of faith. But compared to the alternatives, you know, why not? What's out there for us when we go back out? Death, prison, hospitalization. And a lot of times we take people down with us, which is horrible. So what's the alternative? We have to turn to a power greater than ourselves to restore us to sanity. We keep conscious contact with God and pray to make that contact closer. We pray that our will be laid aside and that God's will direct us. And this is what we pray for. We pray for calmness, because I'm a very excitable person. It doesn't take too many people to cut me off in traffic for me not to, ego myself on them. And we pray for quiet relations and rest. A lot of alcoholics are stressed out, and they say, well, I'm not sleep. I didn't get enough sleep last night. Why not? Well, I was watching TV all night. And then they're bitchy the next day. Or they drank 15 cups of coffee, or they ate 14 donuts. Or whatever they did that was stupid. And then they complain about how crappy today is, because they feel bad. I'm one of them, guilty of it. Playing cards all night, Jerry knows. You're tired the next day, you know, and your attitude's not as good as it could be. So a lot of this stuff is practical, doing things that are practical, taking care of yourself. And that's what they mean when they say we lay our will aside. We pray for forgiveness and for yesterday's errors, because we do make mistakes. People make mistakes. That's why we're people. We're not machines. You know, I know machines don't make a lot of mistakes, but I think we're really hard on ourselves once we get sober. You know, once things are better for us, we're more critical of ourselves. And I think it's always good to have a sponsor nearby that will help you, you know, when things aren't going maybe the way you want them to. Maybe you are cranky or tired, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. We ask for hope, for better things to come. Especially new in sobriety, asking to have some hope. It's the only thing AA really has to offer, is hope. And when we go out and we talk to other people, we try to show them that it works, and maybe they'll get some hope. But sometimes it's the only thing we cling to, is hope. We pray for what we feel we need. We will not get what we want. Thank God. There's a lot of things in life I wanted. There was a certain house I wanted that I thought I had to have, and it was right next to a swamp. But I had to have it, damn it. And thank God I didn't buy it. Because it had a lot of problems after that. But at that moment, I wanted that. I deserve that. I work hard. I tried to rationalize it. I knew the house was stupid. It was a stupid thing to do, but I wanted it. We will get what we need, what is good for us. This maintenance step was planned to keep us out of the alcoholic rut. And we see that rut in people who are just going to same meetings every week, not changing up, not engaging their sobriety in others, not working with new people, not participating in fellowship, not doing what these guys do up here. And so it's important. You get into a rut. Once you get into a rut, you start getting an attitude. You start watching TV. You start falling into the trap when they reel you in. Then you start complaining about everybody and everything. And then it just gets worse after that. You don't talk to your sponsor because you know what he's going to say. It keeps us active spiritually and in tune with God. It ensures against the dulling of inspiration as our alcoholic problems diminish. As our problems diminish, we start looking for problems, and we have to be careful for that. Because we are, like I said, sometimes the curse of sobriety is awareness. We're aware of every damn thing that happens around us. Everything. In our house, with our children. My sponsor used to tell me all the time, bite your tongue. You don't have to comment on everything just because you're right. He said, don't talk to my daughter from the time she's 13 till the time she's 21. And I didn't. That was the best advice I ever got. Because everything I said was wrong. Everything I said was wrong. And after she graduated from college, she said, thank you, Dad. And we have a great relationship today. And the same with my son. I don't have to correct every mistake he makes. I have to let the people in my life make mistakes. That's a hard thing to do. That's how I learned. I made a lot of mistakes. It was all about growing up, you know. The feeling you get when you make a mistake, you feel like, ah, it's the end of the world. if you have nobody to fall back on or nothing to fall back on, whether it's a higher power or, and when I say God, I mean higher power, whatever that may be to you. It could be another human being that you fall back on. So we have to be careful. Am I in a rut? And that's what this is all about. A positive attitude towards permanent sobriety is commendable, but only recommended as it applies to each 24-hour period. We learn to live day at a time. We don't think about sobriety and down the road. We think about, let's just get through today. Because a lot of times that's what it's all about. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spiritual side of the program. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness are essentials for recovery. But these three are indispensable. Honesty, being honest with yourself. Willingness, be willing. I can give you an example there. My sponsor asked me to do something. I think it was going to 12-step list or something. And I was getting all these calls in the middle of the night. And we were doing a lot of 12-step work then. He called me one night and he asked me to do something. And I said, man, I'm really tired. I don't want to do it tonight. And he said, you said you would do anything at the time. You said you were willing to do anything. And so, you know, I had to do it because I told him I was willing to do anything. Didn't want to do it. The fact that we have no desire or intention to ever drink again is a favorable frame of mind. It is our ambition, a mental condition to be grateful for. Alcohol robbed me of my ambition. It took away my desire to be a productive human being. All I wanted to do was drink and forget and just leave me alone. And it got worse and worse as time went on. When complacency develops, we are apt to forget the part that God has played in affecting our rehabilitation. We overlook the fact that our nervous systems are still those of alcoholics. Always an alcoholic. No matter how much knowledge I accrue, no matter how much I work these steps, I'm still always going to be an alcoholic. And so things are going to set me off. Things that don't set other people off are going to set me off. We are people who are so, we feel so much. And Al-Anon talks about this. We feel other people's pain. I mean, we are such empathetic people. We can tell other people's moods. We have that radar. We can tell when people are. I can tell when I sponsor somebody, when they walk in a room, what's going on with them. And they did, and it was the same towards me. We're different that way. We're different from other people because our condition makes us that way. We're always going to be that way too, no matter what. But that's what draws us together too, because we all know what that feeling's like. That's what keeps us here. That's what makes us alcoholics. One that too often fosters complacency, which can lead us into trouble unless God is given proper credit for the sobriety we enjoy. It says God, but it's higher power. My God is the only thing between me and a drink. Because if that were not so, I could quit any time I wanted. There was nothing on that could ever stop me from drinking. When I had it, that anxiety and that panic, and I had to run to that bar to get that drink, there was nothing that was going to get in my way. And the only thing that did was when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I asked my God to take that away, that overwhelming desire to drink. I said, if you take that away, I'll work for you. That was our deal. Serenity West. 40 and a half years ago. I've struck a deal. I said, damn it, I can't stand this anxiety. I can't stand this. All I want to do is run. I want to run somewhere so I can get somewhere and sit down. That's crazy. I had to feel like I had to be over here when over here was just okay. I went to meetings and I had my back against the wall because I was afraid of all you people in front of me. It was that anxiety. Airports. People coming at me. People, it was me. It wasn't all you, it was me. I was feeling that inside. I probably told you the story of how I got pulled out of line in an airport and the guy asked me why I was so nervous. I hate flying. You know, I'm not a terrorist, I just hate flying. You know? Complacency obscures the knowledge that our recovery from alcoholism was granted by a power greater than ourselves. That without contact with God, reversion to our old low physical and spiritual levels is probable, and I've seen it happen many times. People, like I said, I've seen people who work these steps to perfection and didn't stay sober. Because there was nothing that was going to stop them from getting that drink, no matter if they work these steps or not. These steps are designed for living. Living a sober life. Living a better life. Living a good life. Understanding of this situation and the knowledge that some of us do get off the beam spiritually at times is our first line of defense. We fortify this defense by keeping uppermost in our minds that in reality we are only on a daily reprieve. That our reprieves are contingent upon our spiritual condition. The more we take care of our spiritual condition, it seems like the life isn't that bad. The things that used to bother us, that used to be overwhelming, become minuscule. And that's it's a good feeling, not to be panicked about every little thing that's going on. Whether it's in the workplace, whether it's in the home, or even in social gatherings when you're out sociably. The bitter experiences of members who insist upon learning the hard way, the backsliders who return to drinking attest to the truth of the above statement. Their trouble invariably begins with neglect of prayer. It slowly matures as they abandon conscious contact with God and service to others. God has performed a miracle in our lives. We've been freed from alcohol and compulsive drinking. We have acquired sobriety and enjoyed its benefits. We have regained health and mental normalcy and have built up self-respect within ourselves and at home and in among our friends. It is our duty and privilege to safeguard and protect this miracle. We don't get sober so that we get to keep it all. We get sober, and the gifts that come to us from sobriety, we have to give it all away and never be afraid to lose it. It could be taken from us like that. It's not ours. We're just a daily reprieve from alcoholism, from drinking again. Everything I own, everything I have in my life today is because of Alcoholics Anonymous. My children, my grandchildren. There would have been none if I wouldn't have come in here There was no family before I came in here. There was nothing. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can tell this story. I was sober 7 years. And my sponsor said to me, he said, "Isn't it about time that you guys had kids?" And I said, "That's not in the big book." But that was a miracle of sobriety. There would be, that question wouldn't even have been asked if I was still drinking. That daughter of mine was conceived at an international conference in Montreal. My son, who I love dearly, would never have been even thought about. When I sat at the bar and I thought about everything I wanted in my life, and I couldn't figure out why I wasn't getting it, and I was holding the very thing in my hand that was taking all of that away from me, and I couldn't see it. I was the last to know. I was the last to know that. In fact, when I ended up in the hospital, they said to me, "There's nothing wrong with you. You're just an alcoholic. Nothing. If you take care of your alcoholism, you got a good shot at life. Just like the rest of the people out there. But you got to take care of that first. You have no chance unless you take care of your alcoholism." I've seen people take care of their alcoholism and have great lives and families and do really well. And I've seen people who have not taken care of their alcoholism and have died, ended up in mental institutions and worse, jails. I've talked to people in prison who don't even know why they're there because they did things in a blackout they don't remember. And yet, every time their parole hearing comes up, the people from that they did the wrong to come and say, "This SOB did this," and he just sits there. They just sit there and they say, "I don't even know what happened." And they always tell me, "When you go out there and when you talk in front of other people, tell them they don't want to be here. They don't want to be good citizens in prison where they're sweeping the floor and the assholes are kicking them and calling them names because they're going to AA meetings. It's not a joke for them. It's not fun for them. But they want their message told." So even though you're not drinking, you're still suffering. Their only solace might be to go to an AA meeting at, in prison and get some of it off of their chest. But the real reason was they really want you to know that you don't want to be there. It's a life. There is no life. Like I said, this is a constant practice. Killing the ego. My only way that I know to kill the ego is through a power greater than myself. Otherwise, I take credit for my sobriety. When I take credit for my sobriety, I'm one step towards a drink closer. Because look what I did. Look how smart I am. I enjoy my life, but alcoholism is deadly serious. I've seen all sides of it. I think that's about all I got.
This is our portion of question and answers. Does anybody have any questions? I got some people. Got some guinea pigs.
Jim, alcoholic. At the beginning, early in your talk tonight, you were talking about meditation. Mm-hmm. And your sponsor told you to think about something true and just focus on that for a while, just to focus. Would it matter if that true is positive or negative or just true?
Well, one of the things that I focused on early in my sobriety was, I am an alcoholic. True or false? True or false? True or false? And then I would think about alcoholism and how it affected my life. And so I would meditate on that. And it's amazing, because when you do something like that, you start, these things start coming out of you that you never thought about. You know, like how I would rationalize my way to a drink. You know, I worked hard, and I got my paycheck every week, so I should be able to stop and have a drink. If other people can have it, how come they can have it? And I would think about that as being a truth. And I learned a lot about myself that way. Spiritually, I probably said that in the first week I was here. I went 13 years looking for a higher power. I ended up with an exorcist from Rome. That's the truth. And I sat down and talked to him. And we talked about God, and we talked about the power of God. And what he told me, and this is another meditation, and what he told me is, don't ever underestimate the power of God. When you go to an AA meeting, when you leave, do you feel that power? Do you feel that there's a power in here? And I said, I feel better. He says, that's good. You're starting to open up your consciousness to something outside of yourself. And then you look for miracles. Have there been any miracles in your life? Well, I don't crave alcohol anymore, and I was a fiend for it. That's gone. I don't rationalize it. It went from being my best friend to public enemy number one. And I didn't hang out in bars anymore. I started changing, you know, the way I lived. And I thought that was, and I learned that through meditation. You know, I thought about things like that. What do I do to get me in trouble? You know, do I hang out with them old friends that are still drinking? Because hey, come on over and watch a game. And they're all drinking. I know they're drinking. Why do I go over there? Why would I even want to go over there? We never got together to watch a game. We got together to get blasted. You know, and that was a truth that I didn't think about. So, you know, just a few things.
Very powerful tonight, Jim. But I have a question. You talked earlier, I'm not sure if the word exactly was, we're wired differently or something that you talked about, and that we have empathy for a lot of people we understand. On the other side of that, I've been told by many people, and I include myself in this, that because of that, I'm also overly sensitive about criticism from others. Do you find that that's been true in your sobriety?
Sure, we are. I always make the point, it's kind of funny, because we destroyed villages, burned down things, robbed places, killed people, and then if somebody looks at us the wrong way, we go, don't look at me like that. You know what I mean? Where's the perspective? Where is the perspective? You know, we have to grow up. So many times early in sobriety, I would sit there and things would go up my spine, and I would say, just don't say a damn thing. Because I knew once I got rolling, I would say something where I'd have to work the ninth step. You know? So I hated working the eighth and ninth steps because, you know, I didn't want to do that. And I hate saying I'm sorry all the time. You know? I was so low when I came here, saying sorry was a step up, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Sounds comfortable to do.
Hi, Tom, alcoholic.
Hi, Tom.
I'm actually just getting ready to do step 11 with my sponsor, and I'm just looking for a little input from you on prayer verse meditation. I am an atheist. I have never prayed and have no, I don't want to, but I do meditate. In your opinion, does having that suffice? I mean, is it absolutely necessary to have both, or is one enough?
I was told to try it. Pray to something that's not that you don't believe in. Just try it. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, and most of the people that I think do try it, and things, something might happen to you. Just try it. I can't tell you what to do about a higher power, but I can say I've tried things, and those things did work. But my sponsor always said, you don't argue with success. So.
My name is Bob. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bob.
So this is my fifth meeting since I slipped in 5 days ago.
Sure.
And it's also, I've been to an exercise class every day. And I've done yoga and Pilates for 11 years. And I found a yoga instructor at the gym I go to that when you walk in the room, it's, this is your hour. Leave your monkey brain business at the door. And at the end of it, it's breathe in, I am, breathe out, at peace. And another thing that this instructor said is, if you breathe in and out deep 9 times, it resets the nervous system. And I'm really grateful to be part of that as well as part of AA. Because sitting, calm, meditating, I don't do that well. But getting the little bit of exercise and being part of a group that's focused on health has really helped me a lot.
Well, when they talk about alcoholism, they talk about it as a disease of physical, mental, and spiritual. Everybody I sponsor early on, I try to tell them, make sure you get a physical. And the mental aspect is usually socializing with the group. And then the spiritual is when we start doing for others. That starts to come back to us. When we do for ourselves, it's not spiritual. When we do for others, it's spiritual. So, whatever you can hold on to that's going to keep you sober today, do it. I don't care what it is. I really don't. I just don't want you out on the street riding your car around killing people or doing something stupid or dying or whatever. The sad fact of the matter is, we have to hold on. I have a friend in this program who always talks about it. I always let go, but every time I let go of something, it's got claw marks on it. But you eventually have to let go. So, I guess I don't know if that answers your question.
Anyone else?